Hey, this is Swan, and you are listening to Ink and Worm. Today, I'm so excited to be here with my friend Robin, Robin Wayne,
Hi.
But not related to Batman, who is a dear friend, and we talk about books, and we met at Book Riot Live 2 years ago, and we're still talking, so that's fun. And
well, we hang out and do other things, but mostly it devolves into us talking about books.
Eventually, we'll get around to books.
We talk about a lot of stuff, and then we're like, and so what have you been reading?
Oh, did you finish Queen of the Night?
I have not, because I've been keeping it in my car for emergencies, like book emergencies.
Like when you're waiting for Swan at a bar for 2 hours?
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. That never happened. And then you go out to the car, and then you have a book in your car because book emergencies. But I have books everywhere in my life, so yeah. It's turned into my car book, but I think maybe I'll switch it out because I really want to keep reading it.
Well, I'm just looping this back in Alexander
Chi.
Damn it. I'm not good pronouncing names. Anyone who's heard the show will know this. Alexander Chi wrote it, mm-hmm. and I was introduced to him because he was also at Book Riot Live
last year,
and that you were in love with him, and I was like, who is this person? Anyways, the other star of our show is Jackson Bird. He was also at Book Riot Live 2 years ago and last year.
So it's a Book Riot podcast.
So it's kind of like this podcast has been brought to you by Book Riot Live.
Actually, I just realized I'm wearing a Book Riot sweatshirt.
Nice.
That's appropriate.
Nice.
You were in tune whether you knew it or not. That being said, I am going to commandeer your bio from Book Riot Live. Actually, from the Harry Potter Alliance.
Oh.
It's a little bit longer, so we can find more things to talk about. First I have to find you again. Jackson Bird is a speaker, video creator, and wizard activist. You graduated from NYU with a bachelor's in comparative literature and a concentration in documentary filmmaking. Regularly, you speak about new media and fan activism at events including TEDx Women, MIT's Futures of Entertainment, Book Expo America, and the San Diego Comic-Con. In 2015, you were a Logo TV Social Trailblazer nominee and shortlisted for the Forbes 30 Under 30. There's more here. How much do you want me to?
I haven't heard that bio in a while.
it's a nice bio, but more importantly, I wanted to talk about being head waffler.
Yes.
Head waffler. What is that?
I'm a professional waffler. So I have a show on YouTube called Will It Waffle, in which I put random foods on a waffle iron and I see what happens.
Can I be part of this show one day? Because oh my gosh, I will. Pretty much
you
eat
waffle
whatever waffle.
So,
waffle.
But
they're not. It is not a cooking show, so they're not usually
edible
recipes. Well, they're sometimes edible, but sometimes it comes out all right.
I didn't watch these, so I'm gonna ask for an update.
Mm-hmm.
Your top viewed videos on YouTube are Snickers Will It Waffle, and Gummy Worms Will It Waffle.
Yes.
Will they waffle?
Snickers, yes, if you eat it very quickly. And then it consolidates. Gummy worms, no, not at all.
Didn't work at all.
No.
Gummy worms will not waffle. Okay.
No,
just
very sad.
It's kind of like the things that when you're a kid, you're like, let's roast Starburst on the campfire.
Yeah.
Because that's a thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, like, did you ever as a kid, like, put marshmallows in the microwave?
Yes.
Peeps, actually.
Yes. Okay. So I've waffled both Peeps and marshmallow fluff and hoping they would do the microwave thing. And they do for a little bit. They kind of like, you know, become like they expand and make the waffle iron like grow. But then you open it and they're just gone. They evaporated.
Well, that's sad.
Yeah.
You've got like a inhale the dust. Of
yeah,
them,
kind
I
of.
Think.
Yeah.
I feel like Peep.
It could probably
be
toxic.
Amazing. No.
Toxic
fairy dust
and
would
delicious.
Be amazing.
So how did that happen? You just started waffle ironing everything and thought it was brilliant and started making shows and people liked the shows?
I mean, I've always loved waffles and just sort of like...
Well, who doesn't love waffles? I mean,
exactly.
Really.
Yeah. And I did already waffle a couple of weird things on the waffle iron, like regularly, like cinnamon rolls from the tube.
Oh.
Never cooked those in the oven.
Oh.
Yeah. Always cooked them on the waffle iron.
I know.
My head just like...
You killed both of us just now. We both went... And now we're going to stop the
and
show.
And now we're going to take a short break.
Come back.
And we're going to have a new sponsor. Cinnamon rolls.
Yeah, but I had been making YouTube videos for a long time, so it just seemed like one day I was like, I'm going to do this, like kind of make a Will It Blend parody as like a one-off, but it got such a like, you know, people loved it so much and I had so much fun doing it. I've just kept it up.
It's like the in Utah there's a blender company, Blendtec.
Yeah,
and they
so
have
they do
like
will
the
it blend?
Will it blend?
Yeah.
It was like, can you blend a rake? Yes. Can first, you blend an iPhone?
Yeah, why would you want to blend an iPhone though? Like
to
I like,
prove that you can.
Yeah.
But I like cool. my iPhone where it is, and I don't think that you would ever do will an iPhone waffle.
I have wanted to,
but I feel like that's a really parody. Pricey, well, really yeah. pricey, like YouTube video.
Yeah,
you find one with a broken screen or something.
Well,
that
so
someone
the
trashed.
Actual challenge beyond that is the fact. So, like with Will It Blend, it's fun to like you know throw whatever in the Blendtec like blender and see them destroyed and prove that Blendtec blenders are the best and can blend anything. But with a waffle iron. Things don't get destroyed that quickly. It's a very slow heat.
Oh, that could be very noxious then. With
yeah,
the
exactly. Yeah. So the fumes is really idea. What's it. And also that, like, it actually wouldn't be that fun to watch. It's not that entertaining.
And do you have a preferred waffle brand?
Yes.
Waffle maker brand?
I always forget. It's like the WCM15 or something. but it's by Cuisinart. If you look up, like, Cuisinart waffle iron on Amazon, it's one of the first results.
Because it's popular.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
a reason.
I've been working on an Amazon review for that waffle iron. They don't let you do hyperlinks, which is the problem, because I want to link to all of my videos, but mm-hmm. I want to just, like, list everything that I've waffled on this waffle iron and to show that it's a really great waffle iron. But the best thing, the reason this is truly the best waffle iron is because one time... I was at a conference in Florida, and I broke one of the irons a little
you
bit.
You brought a waffle iron with you to a conference in Florida?
Yeah, I always have to travel with a waffle
you
iron.
You travel so with a waffle iron? Yeah. Okay. I just, like, does it have its own bag? Did you have to check it?
It does, actually. My friend Joy like, made me a waffle this? Print tote bag.
Oh,
that
oh my
in.
God. Amazing. Yeah.
I love this.
It's really great. Yeah, so that's the designated waffle bag. But anyways, the waffle iron, it broke a little bit. It was still usable, but like I needed to buy another one, and then I didn't want to travel back with two waffle irons. So I decided to bury the one of them in Florida. Mm-hmm. And then I knew I was coming back for the same conference a year later. So the next year I went and I found the waffle iron, and I didn't think it would be there,
but
it was. I dug up my waffle iron, and it was still there, and I had a live show, and so I like edited together the whole story of this. I'd kept it secret for a year what I had
God.
Done. And then I like revealed so the waffle iron and we made a waffle on it. It was still covered in dirt and everything, but it still worked. So I really want to leave an Amazon review that's like,
please leave an
I
Amazon
buried
review.
This waffle please. Iron for a year and it still worked. Five stars.
Not only that, you left it in the ground in Florida where there's like lots of rain
and lots
humidity,
of old people with metal detectors.
And metal detectors. Yeah. Yeah. Like, well, the fact that it wasn't found is not necessarily part of a good review. Like, it doesn't have like cloaking abilities.
Yeah.
The cloaking abilities should need some work.
Exactly.
Outside of that, it's a very solid waffle iron.
Yeah.
See, I bought my dad. He loves waffles, but he doesn't like traditional waffle irons like that you plug in because he feels like he can't clean them very well.
It is hard. Yeah.
So I bought him a cast iron waffle maker that you can put on the stove and like separate.
Oh, what? Oh,
wow.
I didn't know that it existed. I am a cast iron junkie.
Oh my God.
Ooh, yeah, you need one.
Yeah.
We haven't tried it yet. It was a Christmas present, and I'm only there every so God. Often. But
I am really excited.
The ones that it's
I might actually use a waffle iron if it's cast iron.
The ones that are easier to find of those, I'm going to mispronounce with like Pizzelle or something. You know the
Pizzelle.
Yeah.
No, they're like cookies, but they're thin. Mm-hmm. I love
that's kind of like
cookies.
The origin of like waffles and waffle irons is the cast iron
like
Pizzelle makers. Yeah.
Hmm. Which is why waffles are like the dessert thing of breakfast.
Yeah.
To be fair, I did have pancakes covered in chocolate ice cream for dinner last night, so I really can't say this.
Nice work. I've been working on a sourdough starter, and there's a learning curve that's really frustrating to me in the sense that like sometimes I'll, well, maybe I should document better, so that's on me, but like sometimes I'll make pancakes and they'll be divine and like the perfect crisp on the outside, but just like fluffy on the inside. And then sometimes they'll just be so dense and like sourdough-y.
Well, it really depends. So I have the best like homemade waffle. It's too many waffles. Pancake recipe ever. And it's really easy. It's one cup of flour, one egg, one cup of milk, one like heaping tablespoon of sour cream, and one tablespoon of baking powder. And they come out with the fluffiest pancakes every single time as long as the baking powder is fresh. Like, you can't use
maybe I
old
should
baking powder.
Try baking powder. Because the thing with the sourdough starter is, like, the density and, like, when you last fed it and, like, how healthy the bacteria plays such a part in the final product that I haven't, like...
When you fed it?
Yeah. So sourdough starter is like a natural yeast fermentation that you use to make bread. And the reason why I like it is I don't do well with gluten, but the sourdough starter eats away at the gluten enzymes. So you can, like, people with celiac can have pure sourdough bread because the gluten's like been processed in a way that makes it
edible.
Yeah. Don't like just go out and find a loaf though. It has to be like the right, like,
It has to be real sourdough.
Yeah.
Or like make your own, like Swan's trying to do.
Yeah. So I think I'm frustrated because I had a friend that was just like, oh, I'll just try this. And then like 3 weeks later was making these beautiful, like perfect loaves of bread. And I was just like, oh, okay, I can do that. And I guess comparison is not the best way to go. Okay. That was quite the wonderful tangent. I have one more question for you because it's important. Favorite waffle recipe?
Oh, I honestly, I just combine Bisquick and water when I make my own waffles. I go, because I'm lactose intolerant too. Mm. So that's just how I was raised. That's all my mom ever did. And it seems to work good enough. But it's tasty. I do, you know, I like to combine like blueberries or chocolate chips sometimes.
Oh, yum.
Here's the thing. Like, I don't like real maple syrup. I'm like, it doesn't taste right to me because I grew up on like log cabin maple syrup.
On high fructose corn syrup?
Yeah. Well, log cabin has no high fructose corn syrup, which is why that's actually my preferred syrup.
Well, that's what I grew up on. So that's like, it tastes like childhood to me. Yeah. And I can't actually, I don't like real maple syrup at all.
Yeah.
That's, you're probably part of a minority.
I actually am not sure about that. Like,
At least in terms of like, our demographic in New York City, maybe a minority. United States writ large, probably not.
Well, I guess both of you sitting here have that preference. And I,
well, also it might depend where you, because did you grow up in like the Midwest or the South?
I grew up in Jersey, like just over the bridge.
I grew up in Texas. Like I didn't realize
maybe
like
geographically.
Yeah, exactly. Like people in New England, like maple syrup is just everywhere, and it's like, whoa, really? That was such a
Jersey
expensive
is not
delicacy.
New England.
No, I know.
If you visit Vermont, you probably wouldn't enjoy it because everything is maple, pure Vermont maple.
Yeah.
I've never been to Vermont, so maybe I should just... honestly, I've been to a lot of states. I've been to...
But there's no reason to go.
But Vermont, apparently, I should not visit.
Yeah, it's not on the list, not on the radar.
Sorry, Vermont. I'm sure it's very pretty, but apparently I won't like any of the food there.
The majority of the state is actually a national park, so like...
I could bring my own fake maple syrup with me and just like not get any
you
food
could.
There.
Yeah, I think you could do that.
I think they might hunt me down and kill me, but I could do it.
Yeah, just don't let anyone know. Put it into like a maple syrup jar.
Yeah,
like empty out a maple syrup jar and then fill it with my maple syrup substitute and like go
but
at it.
Except now you've said it. Anyways.
They don't track who comes into the state yet, so.
Yet.
Yet.
I did say yet.
I know, it was qualified. Robin, you recently went to a publishing training course at Oxford. I would love to hear some more about that process. Anything you're willing to share?
It was actually through Columbia University. They have a course here in the city, and it's called the Columbia Publishing Course. And last year, they decided that they wanted to take it to the UK because they have a lot of people who come over from the UK to take the course here in New York. They thought, well, if they're coming over here, we should do it over there. So it was actually at... the Columbia Publishing Course at Oxford University. And last year was the first year they did it, and it was the best experience of my entire life. And I would go back tomorrow without any notice. They were like, hey, if you want to get on a plane like right now, I'd be like, okay.
Yes.
I'll buy clothes when I get there. They'll all be covered in Oxford, you know. We actually got to stay in the dorms at Exeter University, Exeter College in Oxford University, which their dining hall is the... inspiration for the dining hall of Harry Potter.
Oh, nice. I think I might have visited that on my like Harry Potter tour of the United Kingdom when I was 12.
What's really funny is you're like taking classes and like staying in the dorms and like people are coming to like tour the college, not because they're like trying to go there. They're touring the college because it's like it was established in 1314 and it's insanely old and beautiful. And you're like, I cannot believe I'm here right now.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the course, besides being in Oxford, which was absolutely beyond fabulous, they had publishing professionals come and speak to us, like Nigel Newton, who is the CEO and founder of Bloomsbury. And he's the reason that Harry Potter got published. Like, he is the
one that said yes.
He's the one who said yes after everybody else said no. And he's just this fabulous, like, hysterical. I want him to be my grandfather, old man. Like, he was just wonderful.
And sometimes I wish I could pick my grandparents. Like, no, like, everyone after Book Riot Live was like, I wish Margaret Atwood was my grandma. And I'm like, yeah, how do I make that happen?
How is that a, like, how can I make how that happen? Does she have a grandson somewhere who I can marry?
Or, like, adopt?
Yeah, yeah, I guess I could, you could adopt. I don't know how you would do that. I don't think that works.
Like, I'll adopt you as my brother.
Not quite.
I'll just adopt her as my grandmother.
That's fine. I'm okay with that.
It's a reverse adoption.
Anyway, the main part of the course is basically to get people jobs in publishing. So literally, you go through this course and it's basically lectures, and then you spend 1 week putting together like a book prospectus, and you have to come up with 6 book ideas, and you have to write copy and do marketing plans and come up with sales projections. And
you were in heaven.
And it was until 5 a.m. every morning, and I think I was so sleep deprived that I don't really remember the like last half of the week, especially because I got on a plane and came back from my best friend's wedding for 3 days and then turned around and went back.
Yeah. Wow. That's like, you must have just like, been puts, like in this weird like, puts you in, like a dream world.
I was like, I don't know where I am or what I'm doing or what continent I'm on.
It's the equivalent of doing drugs. It's just like your mental state is like,
especially because I had to spend like a night in Iceland, which turned out to be a disaster because I couldn't get a cab in the morning to go back to the airport. And I walked halfway back to the airport in the snow before a cab picked
like,
me up.
Whoa. Wait, from like Reykjavik to the airport?
Yeah. Ooh. Well, I was actually staying in Keflavik, like right near the airport. I was staying like, I want to say like 6 kilometers from the airport. And I was like,
but
I could walk. I could make it happen.
Like at this point.
So, but I had been dropped off by a cab the night before. And I was like, oh, hey, are you working tomorrow morning? Can you just come get me? And he was like, no, you're like my last fare. I'm not working after this, you know, but there is a taxi stand nearby where you're staying. I was like, okay, great. Empty. So he pointed me to the taxi stand, and the taxi stand looked like it had been closed for like 8 months, and there was no one there, and they didn't have any cars, and there wasn't a sign on the door saying, oh, we'll be open at, you know, 9 or whatever. I was like, okay, this is great. This is a good way to start my day. Great. Because, you know, my friend's getting married like tomorrow, and I have to be in New York at noon for the rehearsal dinner. So I'm like, okay, well, I have no other options. I don't have a car. You know, I'm staying in an Airbnb, so I'm not even like at a hotel where people have cell phone service where they can call me a cab. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to walk. Like, it was like 2 turns. It's really easy. I, you know, and eventually I just run into the airport, right? So I'm walking and this cab is coming up, and I'm like waving because I'm like, yes, the cab. You know, I hadn't gotten very far. I was like, okay, great. You know, I'm on the main road and there's this cab coming towards me. I'm waving, trying to get him to stop, and he waves at me and keeps driving.
Oh.
And I was like, that was not ideal. But I eventually got
this
a cab
is not
to
New York.
No, it's not New York. But I definitely got a cab to pick me up. But they're pricey. Mm-hmm. The cab, 6 kilometers from the airport to where I was staying, was like almost $60.
Whoa.
It was insane. I was like, I can't believe I just paid that much for a cab.
I think that you got gouged because I took a, or maybe it was an Uber. But I did not.
I took it. I basically picked up a cab at the airport.
I also had an experience in Iceland with an Airbnb, and I didn't look at a map because I don't do that sometimes because I'm me, and was like, I'll figure it out when I get there. And then I got there and was like, oh, I am in the middle of nowhere. So I got a car, and it was like $30 to like go forever in the middle of a storm to the middle of nowhere. So I feel like maybe they just like in the moment they're like.
It was also very late at night. I landed at like 1 a.m. And so, I don't know, because here in New York, sometimes they have like late night fares. Like
It changes. Yeah.
So it changes on the time of day.
I don't know.
So it just was really expensive. I was like, I can't believe I just paid that much for a cab.
It's pretty crazy. You should have kept walking.
No, it was snowing. And I don't mean like flurrying. I mean like snowing.
Iceland
and it's the middle of September and it's snowing. And I'm like, okay, no, I'm not going to keep walking. That was a bad idea in the first place. But the course was incredible. And I have this really great book that I could show you if you really wanted to see it with all the book titles we did. And then basically they help you with, they get this resume expert to come in and take a look at your resume and your cover letter, which I've never been comfortable with cover letters before. So having someone come in and go, oh, no, this is good. This is good. This is what you should change was
relief.
So super fantastic, especially when you're going to start looking for a job in a completely different industry than the one you're currently working in.
Yeah.
I got a job in publishing as a result about 4 months later, which is so exciting. I haven't started yet, though.
It is very exciting because, well, I met you a couple years ago, but how long have you had the dream of working in publishing?
I can't tell you a time that that hasn't been where I wanted to work.
Exactly.
Like, I worked at a small independent bookstore in New Jersey called Shaw's Bookshop when I was in college, which I absolutely loved, and Tom was so great. And it's like, I go there and it's like family, and I still get the discount and stuff like that. I love independence. There's actually a really great independent here in Astoria. I kind of want to go in and be like, can I just come in and work on the weekends? Because I just want to be around you all the time. Yeah. Like,
do it. You can support your local bookstore, not only by purchasing books from them, but also by begging them to let you work there.
For money that is completely insubstantial.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
It's
so,
like a labor of love.
But my parents were always like, you know, you have to find what you love. And when I graduated college and I knew I wanted to go into publishing, it just did not work out. So I went and did something else. And then I got to a point in my life where I was like, no, this is what I really want to do. Mm-hmm. And I started doing research on how to get into the industry, how other people had gotten into the industry. And I'd actually, there's an editor at Penguin Random House, whose name I don't remember, did a Twitter broadcast thing where they did like questions and they asked her how she got in. And apparently there's a course also at NYU, which is the one she did. Mm-hmm. But the one at NYU was literally right in the middle of my summer vacation. I was going to be out of the country for 14 days right in the middle. So that wouldn't have worked out.
Was this when you went to the UK?
Yeah, I went to the UK to see the Cursed Child.
Oh.
Oh my God, it was so good.
Yeah.
I am going to the auditions for the Broadway version of that.
Nice! I'm so excited. That's awesome.
I'm not Equity, so they're probably not even going to see me, but I'm like going and camping out for like all the chance.
No, do it, please. And when you get a part, gonna invite us to come.
Yeah.
Obviously, because the likelihood of all of those things happening is pretty low.
I think they're actually only casting like understudies for all of the like kid roles, which is what I would be playing. Like, they want adults to play teenagers, which is my range, so that's
nice.
Great.
Nice.
Yep, there you go.
But it's an incredible show, and it really I've read the screenplay and script.
Oh, yeah, I haven't read
and
the script
I
yet.
Obviously I've seen the show.
Which
and
did you do first? Did you read the
I
script?
Saw the show because I went July 4th weekend and the book wasn't out yet.
Yeah.
So I've done both, and it is really meant to be seen. It is not meant to be read. Like, I really feel bad for people who just got to read it and not to see it.
That's what I've heard. Like, everyone who saw it was like, this is the best thing ever, and everyone who read it was like, what was that?
Seriously, that's exactly how I felt about it. I was like, I really loved the show. So, like, we literally walked out and I was like, can I get tickets for tomorrow?
Go again. And that's how you know it was good.
Like, can I go now? Like, I don't, can I stand in line and just, like, if no one shows up, I'm going to
just, like, stand by?
Do they do standby plays? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't see enough plays to know. You're listening to Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. If you just tuned in, you can catch the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, should be all of the things. And make sure you leave a review or send me your thoughts, inkandworm@gmail.com. Also, Radio Free Brooklyn is a community-sponsored radio station, so you can check out that community and find out different ways to support us. Keep independent radio alive, especially through these troubling times. Speaking of that, Harry Potter Alliance.
Yeah.
It's an advocacy group turning like fandom into action. Mm-hmm. And you guys have had quite a few successful campaigns. The ones that came up quickly on Google were the Fighting Child Slavery and Economic Inequality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're sometimes we call ourselves a Dumbledore's Army for the real world, which feels, you know, especially resonant in our current
at the moment.
Yeah, at the moment. But basically, we use sort of the power of story and the inherent enthusiasm of fans and fandoms to mobilize everyone towards social action. You know, people who read books tend to be the kinds of people who root for the underdog or feel like the underdog themselves. So there's a lot of that passion there. And a lot of the skills that you need to be a good activist, like creative art abilities, networking sensibilities, that sort of thing. So it's always been a very natural fit. We're actually in our 12th year now. We just turned 11 in October. We've been around for a long time, and we work on all sorts of issues because our kind of our mission is more like educational leadership training focused. We work a lot with people who hadn't been activists before, maybe wouldn't identify with that term. And so sort of like training them up to be leaders in their communities or in the world at large. So we've worked on all sorts of things from like funding the protection of civilians to disaster relief to literacy to LGBTQ equality. The child slavery thing that you brought up was that was actually to do with like the ethical sourcing of cocoa and chocolate. So we wow. it was brought yeah. to our attention in about like 2008, I think. By a member of the HPA. We've got like over 200 chapters around the world on six mm-hmm. continents. So we have like members all over the globe. It's very cool. And one of them who was like an organizer of our chapter said, hey, you know, I've been like learning a lot about the cocoa industry and it's really, really terrible. They're like basically enslaving people, oftentimes children who are providing like, you know, like what do you call it? Like harvesting the cocoa beans mm-hmm. and all that stuff. And she said, you know, there's a good chance that the chocolate frogs that Warner Brothers produces for Wizarding World and stores around the world has, like, child slavery somewhere down the line.
Yeah.
And so we were like, wow, yeah, that is terrible. So we sort of we looked into it. You know, we, yeah. as a fan activist organization, we never wanted to be like, we're going to boycott Warner Brothers. Like, we didn't ever want to have
it. Yeah, it's never, like, a personal attack against.
Yeah, we never wanted to have, like, an antagonistic relationship with Warner Brothers and especially with J.K. Rowling. So we always kept her up to date with what we were doing. And it started out with just sort of asking them, hey, you know, can you show us what your ethical sourcing or what your sourcing is for your chocolate? And they're like, yeah, it's good. It's all ethical. It's great. And we were like, awesome. Well, you know, can you just like show us what it is? At the same time, we also got an independent report done by like a third party that gave them an F in ethical sourcing.
Ooh, yeah. That's not great.
Yeah. We were like, so this isn't good. And then Warner Brothers was like, yeah. But we did our own report and it's great. It looks great. Saying this now, it sounds so much like what the leader of our country would be saying right now. Like, yeah. Hey, it's great.
I'm yeah, no, it's totally it. Fabulous. Yeah. I said it and I did the report, so yeah. I know everything.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. The best report you ever seen, period. But yeah, and so we did a campaign for several years, like trying to get them to show us the report, and we did all kinds of things from having members like write letters to Warner Brothers to make videos that were like video howlers telling Warner Brothers what it meant to them. We even made our own chocolate frogs that were fair trade. Chocolate frogs. So we did all kinds of things over many, many years. And finally, in I think it was 2014, end of 2015, we were able to get a meeting with Warner Brothers out in Burbank and sort of sit down and talk to them. And a few months after that, we got a letter from them saying, you know, we've looked into everything and we are going to be changing all of our Harry Potter chocolate to be fair trade or OOTS certified. And it is all around the world. It should all be by now. Some of the labels were like took a while to switch over, but I think everywhere except maybe Japan should be switched over now.
Wow. See, activism works, guys.
Yeah. And choices matter.
Yeah, it took a very long time. And you know, like, why just that chocolate? We always got that sort of question. It was like, well, I mean, we're the Harry Potter Alliance.
Yeah, so, linked back.
Yeah, it linked back in that way. And it's like awful to think of like kids in America like going to Orlando and having the time of their lives at like Harry Potter land, that's so not Wizarding World, and you know, eating this chocolate, but that chocolate was made by kids their age in another part of the world who are like being torn away from their parents.
That is actually kind of horrifying.
And the hope is, you know, when one major company makes this decision, it's sort of a domino effect
the expectations pressure on other people to clean up their act.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, it's not just their chocolate frogs, it's like all their chocolate, right?
All their Harry Potter chocolate.
See, yeah. And I feel like it's still, because if they're going to move all of their sourcing to one side as opposed to the other, they're probably going to like try and, because economies of scale and everything, they're probably going to try and move all of it mm-hmm. over. So I think that even impacting that one small bit for them is going to impact the business overall. So
yeah, hopefully. But yeah, I mean, most of the time, so that was a rare case of us actually like sort of working within the Harry Potter universe. Usually we go beyond it, because that was sort of like, oh, here's a thing in the Harry Potter universe that we're upset about that we're going to like activate on. But usually it's even less related than that. You know, right now we're doing sort of our ongoing campaign for the new administration is Neville Fights Back. Mm-hmm. It's sort of our resistance campaign of just like anything that comes up, you know, any like all of the needing to call our senators for all the new appointments, like just like anything that comes up, we're putting it under the branding Neville Fights Back and just sort of engaging everyone with the idea of like, yeah, Harry and Dumbledore were off like fighting these big fights, but who was back at Hogwarts keeping the resistance alive? It was like Neville and the rest of Dumbledore's army. So there are like small ways that you can take action as an individual in your everyday life and sort of promoting all of those ideas.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Resist. That's something. Do you know Vi Hart?
Oh yeah, we love Vi Hart.
Yeah,
I say we as the organization, yeah, not because I am multiple people.
I mean, if you are multiple people, that's okay too.
It's also
that's cool.
Or you could talk about yourself, you know, in the third person.
That, yeah.
Jackson loves Vi Hart.
I woke up to like a tweet that I sent to someone at like 1 a.m. that was in the third person, and I was just like, what?
Okay, well, she did a video that I love for people, like, entry point advocacy is like, find a time every week that you set aside that you're going to do something. Mm-hmm. Just like, I think that honestly is the hardest thing for most people, just being like, oh, I'm so overwhelmed, I don't know. And it's like, okay, well, 20 minutes on Mondays during your lunch break, start. Yeah. Like, you know,
call your senator.
What is their number? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it's just like something that I've constantly been pushing to my family and friends in Utah. Just be like, okay, we'll start. Like,
do a thing.
Do something.
Don't sit there and, you know, be like, the world hates me and I'm going to sit here and be sad.
Or I think my thing is I'm an introvert, so going to all the marches is like a little bit traumatizing, but it's like, okay, so what can I do?
Yeah.
Instead.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a big part of what the Harry Potter Alliance has always been about. We, you know, as I said, we have a lot of first time activists, and we also, being an internet based organization, have a lot of introverts or socially anxious people. And so it's always about sort of meeting them where they're at, like, you know, guiding them in discussions. And we'll do, anytime we have phone banking, like, campaigns, we'll actually just sit on a live stream and we'll call. And so people can see us do it and how awkward we might be doing it, or give them tips. And so we all just sort of have this, like, online chat of support of, like, okay, I'm going to call. Like, here's what you got to do. And, just anything we can to sort of encourage each other. And because, you know, like, those aren't things that should hold you back from being able to make a difference in the world. Like,
yeah,
so many people
definitely
want to.
Well, I mean, and it's part of the thing of, like, introverts matter. And there's all these articles on introverts and, you know, their role in society. And I think it's so important for people who are, I've been reading a book called The Highly Sensitive Person, so it's rooted in that, but just like how important these people are and how little like attention they get, because their aptitudes, their natural inclinations are to not like be visible and not be, you know, we reward extroverts on a much more like, I don't know. So we're all valuable and, yeah, I don't know what I'm saying. I'm done.
Okay.
Next thing, how long have you been with the Harry Potter Alliance? From the beginning?
No. I was 15 when they started, which actually, I mean, we've had volunteers who were like 15, so that shouldn't shouldn't be a reason I wasn't.
That shouldn't stop anybody.
Yeah, not at all. But I didn't hear about them until I was 20, which was 2010. I was a volunteer like throughout college, and then about a year or so after college, I started working for them full-time, like as an employee.
Yeah. And you love your job.
I do. I do love my job.
Yeah, this is something I definitely...
We can tell.
Oh, that's good.
You've got the I love my job glow that I... Like, some people hate their job, and it's fine.
Yeah, but... I'm always, like, you know, being friends with so many people who are, like, just out of college, just, you know, being in your 20s in New York City, there's so many people who struggle to find a good job that they like, or a job that gets paid, or find a job at all. And so I can kind of never talk about my job around my friends, because like, if, you know, you still, even when you love your job, there's day-to-day complaints, and it's hard to complain about it when people are like,
I would say talk about it, because the enthusiasm carries, and like,
yeah, but it is, it's like,
it
you
is
know,
kind of like,
if I'm like complaining and people are like, okay, you got to work from your couch all day, and this weekend you're getting paid to go to Comic-Con, so like, can you shut up?
So real.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. No, yeah. I totally understand that, and I probably feel about the same way as they do. I mean, I don't love my current job, but
I'm
so excited about my new job that I can't. People at work told me I glow, which you just said, like the people who love their job kind of glow, and I was like, that's so funny.
I love a dog walker right now, and it's definitely the favorite job I've ever had of all my jobs.
Yeah, that
so I get
great.
To hang out with cute little doggies all day,
and they love you.
So much, except one of them.
You could have just seen Swan's face when she said that. It was true honesty right there.
Yeah,
I'm definitely an honest person. If I think or feel something, I have to be like, oh, that's not socially appropriate. Last thing with the Harry Potter Alliance, you guys are doing a drive right now, or in April.
In April, yes. So every spring we do Accio Books, our annual literacy campaign. And it did start mostly as a book drive. So over the years, we've our chapters and members have collected and donated over 300,000 books around the world. And yes.
I came last year.
Nice. To the Tumblr event?
Yeah, I was at the Tumblr event.
Yeah. So in addition to the book drives, we also do a whole bunch of just other like literacy celebration kind of events. And also we try to incorporate advocacy. We work with the American Library Association specifically on their National Library Legislative Day. And as many other things as we can incorporate, especially this year, I think we're going to be trying to
push.
We're definitely going to be pushing the importance of education. That is very important after Betsy DeVos was appointed. And I think also probably we will be activating around issues of net neutrality, because that's also, of course, in danger right now. But it's a great time. If anyone wants to get involved, just go to thehpalliance.org/accio books. And our main recipient, we always have kind of a main recipient each year that you can ship books to, that you collect if you want to. This year it's going to be in San Diego. I'm terrible. I don't remember too much about the organization, but every year it's usually an organization that is, you know, maybe they're helping provide books for refugees, or they're a community that's desperately in need of books. Last year, actually, our HPA Masaka chapter in Masaka, Uganda, had just built a school, like in their community. They literally built a school from the ground, and so they were our main recipient to send books over there. And actually, Anaprint was able to work with us, and we were able to donate some computers to them as well.
Oh, it was really, so exciting. Really cool.
Yeah.
And the event itself was a lot of fun last year.
Oh, yeah?
I ended up playing, I think, I can't remember what it's called, where it's like the men are like attached to we were in the Tumblr downstairs, so they have like games.
Yeah.
What is it called?
Men are, oh, foosball?
Oh. I was playing foosball. I was playing foosball with like random people that I met there.
I was going there too, and I was like, wait.
No, it's foosball. I was playing foosball in Tumblr, which was awesome. And Tumblr's office is fabulous, but there was like food and there's all these book people and you just sit around and talk about books, which is my absolute favorite thing in the whole world.
Yeah.
So.
And I believe admission was one book to donate.
I brought like a big bag.
Good. That's what we love. I think those books that night went to Housing Works, because you don't have to donate to the main recipient. We definitely encourage donating to local organizations that need it.
I remember you guys saying that like if they were appropriate for the school, they were going to go to the school, and if not, they were going to Housing Works.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because for Masaka, there was like, you know, only like kids' books.
You're not going to take romance novels and give them to a school in Uganda.
Or Game of Thrones.
Yeah, yeah. probably not. Yeah. And also to bring it back to Book Riot, again, that event was co-hosted by
Book Riot.
Yeah.
Well, that's how I heard about it. And that's how I heard about you guys, actually. And
that's
now
awesome.
I follow you on Instagram and I'm like creepily Harry Potter Alliance stalker.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of want to do the Granger Leadership Academy.
Registration just closed. I
know.
You should do it in 2018. I am so stoked for the Granger Leadership Academy. It's for people who don't know, it is it's the Harry Potter Alliance's like leadership conference that we run, and we do it every year. This is actually only its like third year this year, but it's a weekend of workshops and panels and wizard rock shows. This year we're doing an expedition to a museum. It's in St. Louis this year. Mm-hmm. And everyone kind of gets, you know, they get divided up into teams, and so it's a whole weekend of sort of like team building and like learning how to be a leader. We have this sort of we kind of meshed the hero's journey with a like fan activist leadership model.
Nice.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, it is.
When I heard about it, I was
so
like,
we're going.
I want to go.
Yeah, everyone should go next year.
But really,
no, like I really want to go.
Really?
Yeah. And to keep it, you know, like an effective leadership academy, we do cap it at 200, so it sells out, you know.
It sells out fast.
Yeah.
I did actually think about it. I actually went as far as like filling out the registration form, but I was like, I don't know what I'm going to be doing when this is going to be happening.
Yeah.
So I can't guarantee that I can even go, and I can't take a spot from somebody who can actually go. So
true.
I didn't do it this year.
But next year it's all ages, all genders.
It's next year.
All fandoms.
No,
you don't
really
have to be involved in the Harry Potter Alliance to to get it. Yeah.
Yes. If you've never heard of Harry Potter, you can still go.
Yeah. Yeah. We won't judge you, although we might try to initiate you.
No, we'll bring the audiobooks and just sort of subtly play them in the background while you're there.
I feel like I actually don't know how old the two of you are, but like I'm like the exact Potter generation.
I'm 30.
Okay. Yeah.
30.
I'm 26, almost 27.
So, yeah.
So about the same age.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, I feel like so many of us grew up listening to Jim Dale's audiobooks.
I never did. Robin sold me on them.
Anyone who did, I feel like, got this subliminal sort of messaging. Like, we all have these certain sounds in our heads that we just, like, fell asleep listening to. It's really
weird. Got her to listen to the audiobooks of Harry Potter because I was like, Jim Dale is so awesome.
So enthusiastic.
They also ruin you for audiobooks because
they do.
He really is the best
actually audiobook reader. There's an audiobook that I absolutely love called The Guernsey Literary Potato Peel Pie Society.
Okay. Say that again.
So it's like The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society, and the audiobook, because the book is written in letters, so it's letters back and forth. They've got different readers for the different letters who are writing them. And it is so well done.
Yeah.
It is so well done. So yes, Jim Dale will ruin you for a lot of other audiobooks.
But long as audiobooks have like a theatrical nature or an engaging narrator. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually also like Neil Gaiman to read his audiobooks. Yes. So amazing.
I'm eternally recommending the book Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe, but one of the best reasons to get the audiobook of that is that Lin-Manuel Miranda reads it. Yeah.
I do like it. Speaking of Neil Gaiman, though, I do really love hearing a book by the person who wrote it.
Mm-hmm. Well, then you get sort of it's what they
layer.
Hear it.
Yeah,
like they like how they hear it in their head.
And, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. There's the book The Clancys of Queens.
Oh my God. I just listened to that. It's
yes.
So
okay.
Good.
I read the book and she's telling me
because
Tara reads the book.
Tara Clancy.
And that's it. So yeah, for people who don't know, the book is like a memoir of Tara Clancy's life growing up in Queens. And it's a specific focus on the fact that she grew up like middle class, working class. And there's not a lot of memoirs from like working class people. And she's got the accent.
She's
and,
got the voice. Like,
oh my God.
She has
amazing.
The voice so much. And I especially like, you know, like reading like her grandma. On, like those voices,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
I don't think anyone else would have done that justice.
No.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know how her grandma sounds. Like, she knows how her grandma sounds.
Exactly. Yes.
So,
and
yeah.
She was just so fabulous at Book Riot.
She's such a character. So, if
go to Book Riot.
Yeah, Book Riot is amazing. And Tara Clancy is also amazing. I want to follow her around and see like her interacting with her friends and her kids. She also is a frequent like moderator and storyteller on the Moth podcast.
Yeah.
So you can find the Moth, find Tara Clancy.
And hear her voice and how
exposure.
Amazing she is.
Yeah, she just, on one of the Moths recently aired, she told the story of her second child and I was rolling. Yes.
She's also, and everyone says this to me, but it's like, I read her whole book talking about how tiny she was and then I met her and was like,
like,
you're
but really?
So tiny.
So
see,
tiny.
I read the book after I met her, so.
Yeah.
But she is quite petite.
She's very, very small. Mm-hmm.
She's like a hard ass, though. I would not mess
with
her.
Oh, no way. She could take me.
Yeah.
She is the definition of attitude.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Pretty much embodied. The last thing I want to talk about briefly is something that you've talked about a lot on your video channel and in just like your life and advocacy in general, and that's you kind of coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And you made this like very beautiful video that I'm sure you did and redid. I don't know. Maybe you did it in one go. But just kind of being like, I don't want to have to tell everyone and I don't want to have to keep hiding. I'm curious your experience, because you said it took you about 5.5 years to even get to the point where you're like, this is what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
What was that experience like when it first happened and how are you now?
When coming out first happened? Or
yeah, I mean, I imagine you came out to friends and whatnot, but like a public on the internet, online, just being like,
to
the
world.
Yeah, by the way.
It's funny. I'm actually writing an article right now for someone sort of just about perceptions, how you get treated differently online as different genders. And
mm-hmm.
so I have that sort of unique experience of like how people treated me when I was like presenting female and how they treat me now. And because you weirdly, especially in online video, obviously you get much treated much worse as a woman, but
mm-hmm.
you do get objectified in a positive way much more as a dude usually. But anyways, as I've been writing that, I was reflecting back on like how little I thought about some aspects of coming out publicly.
Like
a lot of it I thought about a lot. I mean, I had like spreadsheets of like who to come out to when and like who needed to know before the video, and like the video I was coming out on Friday the 13th of May. Was that a Friday? It was the 13th of May was
mm-hmm.
definitely the day, and that was like very specific based on like when I had started hormones, when I was telling certain people I wanted I knew which conference people were going to see me at the most, and I wanted them a couple months to get used to me beforehand. Like, so it was all very well planned out.
Mm-hmm. That's actually, you like really planned it. You were just like, you weren't just like, okay, I'm going to do this thing. And then you didn't like drop it on people.
Yeah, it wasn't flippant in any way.
Yeah, it was very well planned.
So what was the most maybe unexpected thing, I guess?
I mean, the fact that there wasn't really a negative reaction was one of them.
That's kind of,
that's really
you're gonna
good
say.
To hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes me so happy.
I mean, I knew within my core community there wouldn't be, because like Harry Potter fans and like just the happy positive side of YouTube that I generally live on are so mm-hmm. accepting and inclusive.
Like way more accepting and inclusive than some other people.
They're also way more queer than a lot of people.
Yeah,
so it was like, I was like, I had been making LGBTQIA videos for a while, and I knew I had a lot of like young queer and trans people following me already, mm-hmm. thinking I was just like a cis straight ally. So I knew that was gonna be fine, but you know, when you put it on the internet, like anyone can see it,
and there are trolls.
Yeah,
and anybody who wants to find you for anything can now find that video.
Yeah It's actually what has amazed me now is that I do meet some people even like vaguely within the community, or like who like I've interacted with online, who don't know sometimes, and that's funny to me. Like I recently met someone who's like a volunteer for an organization I work for, and she had only found out like that month that mm-hmm. I was trans.
I just found out right now.
Yeah,
I did not guess at all. You showed up. I was like, hi, I'm Robin. You're like, I'm Jackson.
Google things. You find things.
See,
which
I didn't
always, you know,
I did not Google you before. I was just like, oh, Swan knows him and he's coming to my house. Okay, great. Like,
yeah,
that was it.
Like, and that's one thing, because as public as I am online, like generally like interacting with bus drivers or whatever, like, you know, I don't want to be outed in my day to life. And so, you know,
it wasn't like you were going to show up at my house and go, hi, by the way, XYZ.
Exactly. But
before we get going.
Yeah. Just so everyone knows.
Just so you know.
Yeah. Which is sometimes important if you're discussing certain things.
Well, and I think it also, for me, it begs the question, because you mentioned in your video, like how personal you are. And so mm-hmm. I was curious about like maybe your sorting process and deciding what to put out. I mean, obviously this is something that you're really wanting to facilitate conversation, because that's something you didn't have growing up. You didn't have the words, you didn't mm-hmm. have the definitions, the people to talk to. So I think like for you being like, yes, I'm happy to talk about it, just because then we're talking about it. But you know, when you are creating public things, mm-hmm. how do you like decide what's personal and what's like, okay, to put out there?
Yeah. Cause I have always been just naturally a private person. You know, one thing I decided very early on was like, I don't really talk about relationships or my personal dating life or anything on the internet.
Are you dating anyone right now?
I have a question.
So, you know, there's also like, you know, on YouTube and on the internet, trans people, you know, for the past decade or so have really heavily been documenting their transitions online. So there are a lot of, especially trans masculine YouTubers who just like, they talk about everything. They'll talk mm-hmm. about, bottom surgery, and they're constantly taking off their shirts and that sort of stuff. And it was like, I don't need to show that, cause all of that is out there. But also like, because my like internet's life is so strictly tied to my professional life and my social life, you know, I'm not that's not the only thing that I do online.
You mean you don't want everybody at work to see you take your clothes off on camera?
Exactly. So that's the kind of thing where it's like I draw that line, but I'll talk a lot about like what it was like growing up or the kinds of challenges that I face day to day.
Thank you for sharing what you do share. Because as someone kind of on the outside, and I know I'm on the outside looking in, like it just makes me so happy to have, even just for me, like a resource to like better understand what's happening in the world and what's happening with people's lives.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of my biggest goal is to try to like, you know, amplify the voices of people and stories that both help trans people, like, you know, have people to identify with and have themselves represented in what our struggles are today and our challenges are today and our needs are today, because they're very different from even 2 years ago. But also to do all of that in a language that's not totally within a vacuum, that also welcomes in people who are learning about what it is like to be trans, because I mean that's one of the most important things.
Well, like you said before, you meet people where they are.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you know, being all inclusive is great, but some people aren't there yet.
Yeah, like, you know, there I I consume a lot of trans content that I absolutely love, but I can recognize, like, even just the abbreviations they're using when they talk. Like, there's no way that this was made for cisgender people, and cisgender people are going to get nothing from it.
Yeah.
And so I try to make stuff that, even if I'm talking about, like, a higher level thing, using language or enough similes and metaphors, yeah, that anyone finding it can get something from, yeah, it.
Not throwing out jargon. That's something that applies, mm-hmm, to publishing, too. Like,
it applies to literally any industry.
Oh, well, words.
Like, if you want to talk about insurance, I could really, oh, really use a lot of jargon for, yeah, you, and then we'll see how much you understand about what I said.
Nothing. Yeah.
I definitely need insurance people to not use jargon, because I,
oh,
man,
my gosh,
insurance, finances, I need to understand a lot,
yeah,
more about,
yeah,
that.
Those are, yeah, you're speaking to me. I'm like, yeah, money, it's like a thing, I guess.
I mean, I have it.
Yeah, I sometimes have it.
Yeah, sometimes.
It comes and goes. It comes in waves. I'm like, oh, and then it goes in waves. And I'm like, oh.
Exactly.
So that's a thing. I like to end my shows with a rapid fire series of questions.
Ooh.
But I don't know. So, first question, I'll just ask you, what's the best book you've read recently?
The one that I've been literally recommending to everybody is The 100-Year-Old Man Who Climbed Out the Window and Disappeared.
Wait, you've got really long titles.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Is
okay.
Like, is that like part of your decision process?
You're no,
like,
no,
know,
it's really not.
Not long,
this title needs to be too
it actually
long.
It's
a one-word title. I'm
it was
really
actually recommended
that
to me, and it was snarky and fun and funny.
Ah.
And it's got something for everybody. Like, it's got a little bit of history, and it's got a little bit of action, it's got a little bit of romance, it's got a little bit of this, it's got a little bit of that, and mm-hmm, it was a really nice treatment of some, like, elderly people are treated very poorly in, mm-hmm, our society, and they're sort of set on the back burner of life, and they have so much to give, they have so much, yes, experience, they have so much history, they have so many things to still offer to society, and like, this book actually does a really good job of like treating this guy who's the 100-year-old man.
Mm-hmm.
Literally the first chapter is him climbing out the window of the old folks home that he's been put in because he doesn't want to go to his 100th birthday party, mm, which is hysterical, and the whole thing is just really funny. I was like reading parts out loud to people, and it was the best book, and I've been recommending it to everybody. Everybody should read it.
I will. I
have a copy somewhere.
And I'm supposed to bring you my copy of How to Make White People Laugh.
Yes.
By Negin Farsad.
Another great book, yeah.
But I forgot that, along with the beer, so this is sober.
Yes, all of this conversation happened while sober.
It's weird.
Shocking.
It's a very, very...
No, we really just went all over the place. So, like, yeah. I feel like I need to add that disclaimer to this episode.
We were
From
not
Reykjavik
drunk.
To
we were sober.
San Diego.
But I'm an anthropology major, and I did a ton of research on touch, and nobody touches old people. So, like, I think part of it's fear. Like, you don't want to hurt them, but just, like, touch the old people in your life because their skin is starving.
Wow.
I always hug my parents.
That's good. It's good. And I mean, even in America, we don't touch very much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think touch changes people. So
I'm like way too touchy, really,
I
for
love
some
it.
People.
I think it's why we're okay. I'm just like, yes.
I'm like super friendly. I'm just like, here, I'm going to hug you now. Like, Jackson, I didn't hug you when you came in, but you're going to get a hug when you
Oh,
came
yeah.
In.
We just did the awkward wrong hand handshake thing.
Well, I was trying to hold the door open and you like offered me your hand. And I was like, this is not working for me.
The Texan in me was like, must shake hand as soon as interact.
We've met a program. Jackson, best book read recently?
I think I gotta recommend Darling Days by Ayo Tollette Wright. It's his memoir about growing up in the Lower East Side in New York in like the late 80s, early 90s as a like kind of genderqueer person, and it touches on so many different things. I mean, definite like trigger warning for a lot of drugs and sex and stuff like that, but I mean, I loved it as a New Yorker. It was like, I always love reading
I love books
things.
About New York. Yeah, really, I do.
Yeah. No, having lived in New York, it completely changes your experience reading books about New York.
It totally does. And I love reading, you know, like people's histories like that from like a lower class part.
Like the Clancys of Queens.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, getting to read a book from someone who, you know, you don't read a lot of more non-binary trans like memoirs,
mm-hmm.
And Io just has a really cool relationship to gender, so it was a really good book. I definitely recommend to everyone.
Cool. Cool. Next question.
Yay, Book Riot.
Yay, Book Riot.
Seriously, this podcast is sponsored by Book Riot.
Officially sponsored.
Yeah, thanks for existing and making this my reality. That's nice.
Seriously, though, Book Riot's the reason we are friends. So thank you, Book Riot, for putting people together who really needed to meet in their life.
Just like anything that like builds connections is like... Book Riot is so good at facilitating connections between you and new books, between you and people that love books, between you and, like, you know, so many other people. It's community. Let's go with, well, I guess we could end with reading. How do you feel about that?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I am sure. So I'll let you guys look up the poem for the sake of time. We used the poem Tear It Down by Jack Gilbert as a prompt. Is it you, I'm guessing, don't want to go first, Robin?
I mean, it is the shortest one, I'm sure, based on Jackson was scrawling away, just like going for it.
My handwriting's a lot bigger than yours, too, though. So.
That's fair. I think I was still writing slower, which I will read. So the two things that came out to me and when you read the poem twice was what does the heart know, and redefining just that word, because the whole poem is about redefining what things mean. So I said, the heart knows what it knows, but what does any one heart know more than another? When it comes to the truth, one truth may be more true for another than for you or for me. Redefining how we see each other, not as adversaries or someone to compete with, rather as a being in this world who has a heart, who has a truth that is different from yours, but whose life is just as worth living.
Thank you.
What was the second line again? I really liked it. The one heart may...
When it comes to the truth, one truth may be more true to another than you or to me.
Oh, wait, no, before that.
Oh, the heart knows what it knows, but what does one... What does any one heart know more than another?
I like that.
Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
Sorry, I was like,
You need to know.
We're okay. Jackson, would you like to share yours?
Yeah, so the lines that stood out to me from the poem were, unlearn the constellations to see the stars, but going back to childhood will not help. So I wrote, it's important to question what we know to the point of forgetting it altogether and starting anew, but we can't just go back to tabula rasa. Unlearning is not the same as not knowing, never knowing. It is knowing with a will to question, to reimagine, to challenge, and all the ways we strive to unlearn our privilege, but that only comes with having learned what the systems that hold up our privilege is. Unlearn the constellations you were taught because they are not the only systems of explanation for what you see in our natural world. Other cultures look at the same stars but see other constellations. It does no good to forget what you've been taught, but does much more to learn what others see too, and thereby unlearn the idea that only your perspective and experiences are true.
So actually quite similar at the end with like the same theme almost.
It must be why I liked yours.
We had sort of the same feeling about the poem.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But yes, you definitely wrote more than I did.
I'll end now by saying thank you guys so much for being here recording with me. I'll read mine and then send us out with a word. You must unlearn the constellations to see the stars. Few things stun me more deeply than a clear night beneath the stars. I recall being struck as a child looking up for hours when we would go camping. Between the stars and the flames of the fire, I was mesmerized. And then I got busy, work, school, life, bills, boys, and I forgot. And then I got into climbing and was invited to join a group of friends to the middle of Ibex, a desert in southern Utah. And away from it all, I was seduced again, once again struck down by the vastness of the sky and space. How small we are. These stars falling have been dead for so long, and just now we are able to see them. The glory that is really the glory that was, but it can still change things. How numerous the stars are, truly beyond count and comprehension, but still part of an ever-moving whole. Thank you for listening, and I'll leave you with a word, take it or leave it, afflatus.